The return to the Creator. In order to implement the divine supervision, and along with that to allow free choice in the actions of man, two systems of governing were created in such a way that opposite each positive pure force, there's always an opposing negative impure force. There were created four positive worlds, Abhyadikadusha, and opposite them were created four negative impure worlds, Abhyadituma, or impurity, as well. In our world, the difference between the pure and the impure powers is not apparent, just as there appears to be no difference between a person who is spiritually ascending towards the Creator and one who doesn't develop spiritually. A person himself is not capable of knowing the truth as to whether he's progressing or remains in place, and can't determine whether a positive or negative force is acting on him. Therefore, the awakening and sense of confidence that his path is true and correct is extremely deceptive. And in general, it's not necessarily the case that the choice was correct and the path which was chosen is in fact true. But if a person is at the beginning of his spiritual journey, how can he advance in the proper direction in order to achieve the goal of creation and the goal of existence? Without a definite perception and understanding of what constitutes good and evil for one's final destination, for one's true and eternal well-being rather than for the illusory and ephemeral gratification, how can one find the right path in this world? All of humanity is wandering lost, as in a forest, and errs in formulating theories concerning the essence of the goal of life and existence, and also on ways to achieving this goal. And even someone who has found in the beginning a point of a proper path has no milestones and is not capable of determining whether his thoughts and desires are correct or not. Is it possible that the Creator would have created us without preparing us with any help for our hopeless and unsolvable state? Common sense says that it's not reasonable to create something with a clear goal and afterwards to abandon the process to the hands of such weak and blind creatures as us, and certainly that the Creator would not have acted like this. Thus, presumably, in all situations, He gave us the possibility to find the proper path. The only way is to go above reason. In all his paths, a person has failures and learns how not to go. A man does not succeed in his act unless he stumbles in it first. When a person feels he's reached despair, he becomes needful of the Creator. In fact, there exists one very important confirmation of the correctness of a chosen path, and that is the help of the Creator. Those that chose the way of the impure and egoistic Abhya do not reach the spiritual destination, lose all their strength in the process, and finally reach the barrier of ultimate despair, since they don't earn the help of the Creator in the form of disclosure of the entire picture of creation. On the other hand, those that follow the ways of the pure world's Abhya are rewarded by perceptions and understanding of the entire creation that's given as a blessing from the Creator. These people are able to reach the highest spiritual state. That's the only test in our world, in our state, as to which path one should take, how one should act, and which thoughts one should choose as being good for achieving his goal from all the thoughts and desires that come to us from both the pure world of Asiya and the impure world of Asiya. Therefore, the difference between one who follows the right path and one who errs is that the Creator will reveal himself to the former and draw closer to him, unlike the latter. Thus, if a person sees that the secrets of the Kabbalah do not become apparent to him, then that person must conclude that the chosen path is incorrect, though enthusiasm, strong conviction, and imagination may point to another direction and indicate that a person has already reached certain spiritual heights. Such an end is common among those involved in amateur studies of Kabbalah and mystic philosophies. Our entire path of spiritual ascension along the stages of the world's Abhya can be described as alternating exertion of force, emanating from each consecutive stage at which we find ourselves at any given moment. Each of these forces is denoted by a particular letter of the Hebrew alphabet. That is, each letter symbolizes a spiritual force that governs a certain stage in the worlds of Abhya. But only one force is able to save a person and free that person from the domain of egoistic desires. That force is the blessing of the Creator, denoted by the letter Bet. There's no opposite corresponding force in the impure worlds of Abhya, since the blessings originated from the one and only Creator, and there can be nothing equal to him in all the impure world of Abhya. Therefore, the world exists only through the blessing of the Creator, and only His blessing can illuminate the distinction between good and evil, or to be more exact, between that which brings good to a person and that which works to the person's detriment. Only through the blessing can one distinguish pure forces from impure ones and overcome the impure along the entire path of a person towards the end of creation, clearly demonstrating whether that person is deceiving him or herself or is truly moving into the spiritual worlds. Every force in the realm of impure forces of evil exists only due to the fact that it receives sustenance from a force corresponding, but opposite to the one existing in the realms of pure forces, with the exception of the force derived from the blessing of the Creator. Thus, this world could not have been created with any force except the one springing from the blessing of the Creator. Without diminishing in the process, this force emanates from the Creator and permeates the entire spectrum of the worlds, reaching all the way down to the lowest stages of the worlds, to our world. This force is able to rectify the creations, giving them the strength to improve themselves and to begin to ascend spiritually. It's with the aid of this force that the universe was created. Therefore, impure egoistic forces can neither diminish its power nor use it to their own advantage, since impure forces have an effect only in cases where there exists weakness of the pure forces. Hence, the ultimate pure force helps a person to distinguish between pure and impure thoughts, since as soon as the thoughts are not directed towards the Creator, the power of the force of the blessing disappears. The sounds of the letters, Nekudot, symbolize the outpouring of light, the perception of the Creator. Any perception of the Creator, any spiritual sentiment, comprises 10 sephirot. Starting from the highest of these, Keter, the sounds correspond to the following gradation. 1. Kametz. 2. Patzah. 3. Segol. 4. Tzireh. 5. Shva. 6. Holam. 7. Hirik. 8. Kibbutz. 9. Shuruk. 10. Without sound. That is corresponding to Malchut, the last stage of perception, which never becomes filled. Sometimes in the process of advancing towards the goal to draw closer to the Creator, a person suddenly feels lowliness and lack of strength, since he lacks knowledge of the Kabbalah and is unable to perform any non-egoistic act, but rather his thoughts are only concerned with his success in this world. That person then falls into despair and tells himself that the drawing close to the Creator apparently was only given to special people who have special powers from birth, qualities, thoughts, desires that are appropriate to this goal, and whose hearts yearn for Kabbalah and for self-improvement. But afterwards another feeling comes to him, that everyone has a place prepared for him beside the Creator, and that everyone, sooner or later, including him, will merit spiritual pleasures from the attachment with the Creator. He then feels that one does not need to despair, and must believe that the Creator is all-able and plans the path of everyone, knows what each of us feels, leads us, and awaits our turning towards him with a request to draw closer to him. Afterwards, he recalls that more than once he had said this to himself, but nonetheless, nothing has changed. In the end, he remains immersed in thoughts of his despicable weakness and insignificance. Afterwards, he comes to the realization that this feeling was sent to him by the Creator, specifically in order that he should overcome it. He then begins to work on self-improvement, using all the will he possesses. Suddenly, that person attains inspiration from the future condition to which he aspires. This means that the light of the future state is shining from afar, since it cannot shine from within as long as the desires of the person remain egoistic in nature. The light, the spiritual pleasure, cannot enter and shine in such desires. The creation is a concentrated essence of egoistic desires and is known as a human being. The Creator, on the other hand, is totally removed from anything egoistic. Therefore, returning to the Creator, attachment to Him, and awareness of Him, all comes as a result of achieving an equivalence of form with Him. A return like this to the Creator is called a higher return. This is the reason that a return to the Creator, a merging with the Creator, an awareness of the Creator, can be considered as nothing other than the concurrence with Him in certain qualities. It is this return to the Creator that is known as tshuva. A person can determine that he has achieved this return only if the Creator himself testifies to it. What is this testimony? It is that the person has the ability to constantly feel the presence of the Creator, which makes it possible to be with the Creator in all his thoughts, and in this manner to tear himself away from the desires of the body. Only the individual himself and no one else feels whether indeed he achieved the return to the Creator. The strength gained through the perception of the Creator enables one to gradually return to the Creator completely and to alter all the egoistic desires to altruistic ones. The more bad desires one possesses at the beginning of one's path, the greater the improvement one could undertake on himself, and consequently, the closer one can come to the Creator. This is the reason that a person should never lament his bad qualities, but rather ask for their correction. A person should turn to this way of thinking every time thoughts of worthlessness come to mind. All of these thoughts are awakened in him as a result of feeling distance from the Creator, and the Creator sends him these feelings, and not to others, but only to him. Other people don't feel about themselves as if they were wicked, and don't perceive their egoism. On the contrary, they're convinced that they're righteous. These thoughts are not sent by the Creator to make a person suffer or to fall into despair. Rather, they're sent in order to cause him to call the Creator, demanding to be liberated from himself, from his dispositions. Every time a person again feels worthless and weak, having already experienced the same feelings in the past, it'll seem to him that he does not need to return once again to those feelings of failure and defeat. He must remember that each time a person goes through this, he undergoes new corrections, which accumulate until the Creator himself gathers them together. All of these negative feelings he has concerning his being distant from the Creator, that he's not satisfied with his spiritual path, complaints about the many deadlocked states, to the degree that it's necessary for him to merit the awareness of the Creator and the pleasures emanating from him. It is then that the gates of tears are flung open, and it is only through them that one can enter the halls of the Creator. Even if he becomes overwhelmed by the powerful reactions and stubbornness of his egoism, nonetheless, he should not decide that the Creator did not give him sufficient strength to cope with his egoism, or that he was born lacking talent, patience, equanimity, and sharpness of mind, or from above he wasn't given the appropriate conditions, and for this reason he was not capable of correcting himself and to accomplish that which someone else in his own place could have done. It's also forbidden for a person to decide that these sufferings are a result of his former sins, or that this is his lot, or because of his actions in a previous incarnation. It's forbidden for a person to give up hope and do nothing, since if he properly uses the minimal strengths and talents that he has, he will have much success. All of the traits of the disposition that the Creator gave him, even the most lowly, all of these he will need today or in the future in order to accomplish that which is incumbent upon him, the correction of his soul. This is similar to a seed. If it's planted in fertile soil and is properly cared for, then the seed will sprout and will grow and bring forth its fruit. Therefore, a person needs both a good mentor and good soil, or a good environment, in order that all of his traits should develop and balance in such a way that each and every trait together should have a proper relationship that will help him to achieve his main goal. All the questions that are awakened in a person are sent by the Creator, and he waits for a correct answer from the person. The answer to the questions of the body and the mind, the egoistic questions such as what for and what do I gain from it, have only one answer, an answer that the body does not understand. It's the will of the Creator that I should reach him this way. All the words of the Kabbalah and all the advice it provides are concerned only with one issue, that is the way we can reach the Creator and unite with him. All our deficiencies stem from our inability to sense the greatness of the Creator. Having just begun to aspire to come closer to him, we already want to experience him in our senses. But this is impossible until we have a screen, or a masach, that refuses the light of the Creator. That is to say, as long as we do not have vessels of bestowal. As long as we do not have these qualities of bestowal, we are only able to have a feeling of the Creator from afar, which is called surrounding light, which can shine from afar to a person who is still distant in his qualities from the Creator. The surrounding light is always greater than the inner light, which is gained through the help of the screen, given that a person possesses certain altruistic qualities. The surrounding light is the Creator himself, while the inner light, the soul, is only that part of the Creator that an individual was able to acquire after improving his own qualities to a certain degree. So how can a person receive the light of the Creator when he's not yet prepared his dispositions? The answer is simple: only by intensifying the illumination of the surrounding light. In other words, only by increasing the exaltedness and the importance of the Creator in his eyes, by means of a constant yearning to sense the Creator as the source of all existence and everything that's done. The person must understand that everything that happens to him is an action of God, and that there's nothing in the world other than him. All of his efforts should be concentrated on this: to not think that what happens to him is through chance, or fate, or a consequence of his prior actions, or the will of others, but he must exert himself not to forget the Creator. Under no circumstances should we interpret the text of any section of the Bible according to our own perceptions likened to the description of events in our world. For example, as I've written in my previous books, the evil leaven mentioned in the Bible is the highest level of the soul being filled with the light of the Creator. Pharaoh is a symbol of the totality of our egoism. Another example can be found in the Bible where it tells how a certain person by the name of Petachiah came into a city and gathered around him empty people. All of them went with him to the desert. The name Petachiah derives from the verb liftoch, to open. A person who opens people's eyes. He gathered all the empty people, people who feel emptiness in their lives. He took them from the city to the desert. He opened up the desert in their lives in order, as it is written in the Bible, Lech acharia bamidbar. Lech, go, says the Creator to the person, acharia bamidbar, after me in the desert, with the feeling that your life without perception of the spiritual is like a desert without a drop of water, that a small spark of redemption from the feeling of emptiness will seem to you like a cool spring in your exhausted soul. A further example can be found in the Passover Haggadah, or the story, on the Exodus from Egypt, from the spiritual captivity of Pharaoh, our egoism. Pharaoh died. Finally, the person sees that his egoism is not for his good, that it kills him, and it obligates him to serve it all his life. This principle now, in his eyes, dies. And as long as he does not recognize that this egoism is his sole enemy, he thinks that his life and servitude in Egypt, or the captivity to the desires of the body, was good and a favorable condition. And even afterwards, occasionally, during spiritual downfalls, he cries for the plates of meat and bread that he had in Egypt, namely, that served his egoism in abundance. As long as Pharaoh, the egoism in the heart of a person, the king, who rules over all thoughts and desires of a person, of Egypt, was alive, he dictated against a person's will what all of the person's desires and actions would be. The person is said to be found in exile or imprisonment of Egypt, captive to various egoistic desires. Mitzrayim, the word for Egypt, comes from the words mitz-ra, a concentration of evil. We ourselves are not able to understand that the nature that rules over us is bad, and this is only as long as the Creator has not yet done the good for the person, and, behold, Pharaoh died. He gives to the person those types of experiences in his life which cause him to recognize that egoism is his enemy. Only then will this symbol of evil die, and we will feel that we're incapable of existing as we once did, working for nothing. And the sons of Israel groaned because of the servitude, and they cried out. When they realized that they were not even able to move without some egoistic benefit for themselves, and have not yet gained a spiritual altruistic nature. And the cry for help from their servitude rose up to God, and God heard our voice. Only if one truly cries out from the very depths of the soul, and this is possible only if the person reached the outermost limits of patience and suffering, only then does the Creator send help. And this help always arrives unexpectedly. An individual can never know in advance which tear will be the last one. All tears should be shed as if they were the last. As for the help of the Creator, Yeshuat Hashem Keref Ayin, it appears suddenly and always unexpectedly. The Zohar is considered by many to be a moral teaching based on the Kabbalah, since it is written in the language of the commandments, prescribing what an individual should do, It is clear that by defining the Book of the Zohar in such a way, they attempt to deny its mystical concealed essence. The authors of the Zohar have written this book, which deals only with the composition and the operation of the spiritual worlds, in a deliberately scholastic and legalistic language. The purpose of this was to leave no doubt in the reader's mind that the main aspect of the Kabbalah is not the wisdom, but the dispenser of the wisdom, and that the main purpose of the Kabbalah and of the spiritual laws is to develop a need for the Creator and to come closer to Him in the qualities of the soul. All the obstacles that a person encounters in his path towards the Creator in order to enter the spiritual realm are actually signs of one's drawing closer to the Creator, to the gates of the spiritual. This is because there's no situation that is further removed from the Creator than when a person does not think at all about the existence of the spiritual realm or is not capable of wanting to experience it. When a person feels that he's distant from the spiritual realm, this is because the Creator has let him become aware of the true state in which he's found, and in this way awakens in the person a desire for closeness to Him. If these feelings of distance from the Creator were not awakened within us, we would have no chance whatsoever to begin to draw close to Him. Therefore, these feelings of distance are a sign of the beginning to draw closer. And so it goes throughout the entire path of one's advancement towards the Creator. A person constantly experiences all types of obstacles. In reality, these obstacles are nothing other than the Creator helping us by awakening in us feelings of anger and dissatisfaction with our present state to cause us to request Him to change it. All the obstacles that a person must pass in drawing closer to the Creator are necessary for getting used to following the path of being distanced, recognizing his egoism and separation. Still, this feeling should not really alter one's actions because it should be recognized in advance that this feeling is a revelation of one's true state and that the previous state was not any better than the present one, although there was no awareness of this fact at the time. And so it goes until a person's concerns about his condition stop being the subject of consideration and all thoughts and desires concentrate on a single aspiration, to care only about how one is looked upon by the Creator. This desire should determine all of one's actions and thoughts. And what it is that the Creator wishes to see in each person becomes clear as one studies the Kabbalah and follows all the directions of the spiritual laws only for the sake of his ultimate goal. Then all the spiritual laws become a tool for unification with the Creator, until a person begins to measure all of his actions and thoughts against the desires of the Creator. He's actually measuring all the actions against the desires of other people who impose their own will upon that particular person, thus defining his thoughts and actions. Never is a person free to act on his own. Either a person is influenced by others who determine his behavior and actions, or the thoughts and actions of a person are dictated by the will of the Creator. Never can one be in absolute freedom. The concealment of the Creator from us is done for our own benefit. Just as in our own world, every object not fully explored attracts us more than the object thoroughly examined, so the veiling of the spiritual world is indispensable in order to induce a person to nurture a sense of importance of the attaining of the understanding of the spiritual world. A person is never truly able to comprehend the greatness of the Creator and of the spiritual worlds that constitute a partial revelation of the Creator. But precisely due to the concealment, that is, to the extent to which the Creator grants a person a sense of concealment and distance, his desire to perceive the Creator becomes aroused, as well as a sense of the importance of striving for the understanding of that which is concealed. On the other hand, the magnitude of concealment is determined by the need of a particular person to attain that which is hidden, and so he gradually attains a sense of the importance of reaching that which is concealed, until he begins to feel that he's removed from the object of his passionate desire. Honor shown to a person fills one's ego and consequently causes great damage to one's soul. The damage is considered to be so great that prominent righteous people who gained immense popularity and acquired followers considered that such fame had befallen on their names as a punishment from the Creator. On the other hand, there are those great ones whom the Creator wishes to protect so that they do not forfeit even the slightest amount of their spiritual level. To these, the Creator sends not only followers, but also those who hate them, envy them, oppose their views, and are ever ready to slander them. Thus, the Creator balances the praise and the honor that's given to these great ones by the suffering that they experience at the hands of their contemporaries. just as it is difficult for the one who has not yet entered the spiritual realm and still has no perception of the spiritual strengths and desires to sustain his actions and thoughts in the right direction. It's easy and natural for a person to act in accordance with the nature of the spiritual worlds if that person had received the spiritual strength and had entered the spiritual realm, thus acquiring a higher disposition. All the time of a spiritual decline, all former spiritual acquisitions disappear. The wish to serve the Creator and to unite with Him, the wish to battle with oneself and to remain only in the state of spiritual ascent, all these disappear. Even the memory of those spiritual achievements disappears, as well as the awareness of the facts that a desire for spiritual ascent can exist. If these things truly exist, one feels at such a time, it's only by lofty and exalted thoughts that one can maintain them and shield oneself from the multitude of petty and minor pleasures of this world. But the majority of ordinary people, to whose ranks one feels that one belongs at such a time, have other worries and aims in this world beside the spiritual yearnings. And how can a simple person such as oneself, one asks, even dream of having a bond with the Creator, not to mention close attachment to Him? The possibility itself seems absurd and remote. It is of moments like these that it is said, where you find the greatness of the Creator, you will also find His modesty, since the Creator gives to each of His creations the possibility to unite with Him. And after the passage of some time, when the dejected individual soars spiritually once again, one must never forget this state of moral decline, so that one can truly appreciate the highly spiritual state of aspiration to unite with the Creator as the personal individual gift from the Creator. In such a case, there will be no need to experience this state of spiritual decline ever again, because through constant work on oneself, through an elevation of faith over reason, through learning and through the observance of an established order of actions and thoughts, a person will create a spiritual vessel for a gradual spiritual ascent. The Path of Kabbalah. The desirable path of spiritual ascent is the path of the Kabbalah. The path of suffering awaits a person only if there's no other way to prompt one to reach perfection. As was stated earlier, the path of Kabbalah is an opportunity given from above to each person in order to create in oneself the desires necessary for spiritual growth, demonstrating through spiritual ascents and declines that the spiritual light is pleasure and its absence is suffering. In this way, one begins to desire the light, in other words, to desire spiritual ascent and the perception of the Creator. Without first receiving the upper spiritual light and then having it taken away, one cannot feel a desire for the light. The greater the light that is initially sent by the Creator to an individual and then taken away, the greater will be the desire of this individual to receive that light once again. This path is known as the path of the Kabbalah, that is to say, the path of the light. But there's also a path of suffering, when a person searches for a way to escape from unbearable suffering that's constantly overtaking him and not from a desire to return to his lost pleasures. With the path of the Kabbalah, there's always in him a desire to become filled by the spiritual light as his vitalizing force of redemption. Both paths lead to one goal, but one draws by pleasure and the perfection which lies ahead, and the other pushes from behind, prompting an escape from the pain. In order for a human being to be able to analyze external factors and internal situations, two means of perception are given: the bitter and the sweet, perceived by the heart, and the false and the true, perceived by the intellect. A spiritual attainment cannot be appreciated by the heart, since it's absolutely contrary to the heart's nature, which is why this attainment is always perceived as bitter, while any personal pleasure is perceived as sweet. For this reason, work on oneself in redirecting one's desires is considered to be the work of the heart. The work of the mind is of a completely different nature, because a person cannot rely on his own mind and logic to analyze the surrounding events. In such a case, he's forced, in spite of himself, to rely on the egoistic natural mind, unable to break away from it, because each person was created in this manner by the Almighty. That's why there's only one path: to completely turn away from the typical inclination to analyze one's surroundings and instead to accept the advice of the sages expounded in the books of the Kabbalah and explicated by teachers who have reached the spiritual level of awareness. If a person is capable, with the help of the Creator, of making even the slightest attempt to analyze through faith rather than by reason, and to discern with one's heart the bitterness of egoism, that person will immediately be sent to spiritual understanding of the attained level, which comprises both spiritual light and strength, or the screen. The Creator then reveals the next lower stage of egoism, which was previously hidden. It was hidden because if a person immediately grasped the entire extent of his own egoism, he would not have the strength to overcome it and would surely become despondent from the overwhelming task lying ahead. However, one should realize that this mountainous ego was always there within him from the beginning, but was hidden and is revealed gradually as the ability to correct it and the strength to do so is acquired from the Creator. That is the reason that a person who ascends the spiritual levels, gradually overcoming his own reason, feels increasingly more perplexed and dense in relation to the guidance of the sages in the Kabbalistic books and of the Kabbalistic instructors. But to the degree that he diminishes the significance of his own understanding, he's granted a higher understanding. In the end, rather than becoming more baffled by turning away from the world's egoistic logic, that person becomes incomparably wiser. For this reason, the one who has not yet reached a higher understanding, who did not alter his way of analysis, who's not begun to feel the sweetness rather than the bitterness of the non-egoistic thoughts, who's not begun to see the truth of faith compared to the falseness of the intellect, which is bound by the nature of our world, this person can still progress by employing an already amended method of analysis derived from one's teacher, listening to that teacher, and following him in everything. Therein lies the counsel of the sages. If only a single Kabbalist possessing the true spiritual understanding of the mind and heart leads humanity after him, everyone can reach the goal of creation, not by the path of suffering, but by the easy and painless path of the Kabbalah. On the other hand, if even the people who were chosen to travel this path first, with whom the Creator first settles all accounts, and from whom the most is demanded, have chosen as their leaders those who do not understand the higher purpose of the Creator or the design of His dominion, then misfortune and constant failures are their lot. Only during wars, catastrophes, or other great misfortunes, when it seems that our problems cannot be resolved, do we clearly see the hand of the Creator in His help. But this transpires only during critical moments in which we find ourselves, since we refuse to acquire Kabbalistic knowledge and use it for the purpose of recognizing the divine providence in the world. Why are people born with different capacities to perceive the subtler forces around us, as well as with different capacities to prudently and logically grasp the nature of things? And what fault is it of a particular person that he, for example, was not created in the same manner as were geniuses, men of deep thought and deep emotions? Why is it that when we are born, we receive from the Creator unequal mental and spiritual desires and capacities? Individuals born with grand aspirations, with a big heart and with a sharp mind, are referred to in the Bible as intelligent, because they're capable of receiving the highest understanding. On the other hand, those born with limited mental and spiritual capacities in the Bible are referred to as foolish people. But since every soul has its own special purpose for having descended into this world, no one should be ashamed of the particular inclinations with which he was born. We should not be ashamed of them, just as we should not be ashamed of our bad thoughts, since both were sent to us by the Creator. On the other hand, we should pay special attention to and be conscious of how we react to bad thoughts, whether we fight them or follow them blindly, whether we correct ourselves, each to the extent of the capacities that he was born with, and what we do towards correcting ourselves. It's of this that each person should be ashamed, and it's of this that each of us will have to answer to the Creator. But still, how can a foolish person reach spiritual heights? The Creator said, "I've created the wise, and I have created the foolish, and I have placed the wise in every generation to help the foolish, so that having fastened their hearts to the ones ascending, they could also reach a complete union with me." But why are foolish people needed in this world? After all, compared to the few wise men of the world, there's an overwhelming multitude of fools. The reason lies in the fact that every spiritual quality requires its own separate carrier. Precisely the people with limited spiritual capacities are the carriers of egoism. The wise, on the other hand, desiring to ascend infinitely in their service to the Creator, and having corrected their own egoism, need to work on the egoism of the foolish ones. To continue ascending, the wise must continuously absorb extraneous egoism and correct it. Thus, both the foolish and the wise are in need of each other. But because the masses can give the wise only their own insignificant egoism, consisting of a desire for the petty transitory pleasures of our world, for every wise person in this world, there are billions of fools. Nevertheless, if the foolish ones act in accordance with the directives of the wise, consciously following the wise in all they do, everyone can still reach the goal of their existence, absolute unity with the Creator. Even though the spiritual work of raising altruism above egoism is carried out within the heart, while that of raising faith over the assertions of the intellect is carried out within the mind, both are contingent upon the rejection by a person of the use of the intellect that was given to each person at birth, as well as upon the rejection of self-gratification and self-affirmation. Because even when already working towards altruistic aims, one still prefers to see and to know to whom one gives and who receives the fruit of one's labor. And in such a case, one has nothing but the faith in the existence of the Creator and the faith that he's accepting the fruits of one's work. Here one finds the notion of the oneness of the Creator in accordance with the principle that there exists nothing but the Creator. An individual has to recognize the Creator as the one sending everything that one senses and perceives in one's mind, bringing one to a particular line of thought, which in turn leads one to certain decisions and resolutions. Only once one acknowledges all the above can one come to a correct perspective on everything that transpires, and to correct one's desires and thoughts in accordance with the design of the Creator. The Kabbalah in its entirety concentrates on the Creator and his actions. For this reason, the Kabbalah is called by the names of the Creator. Similar to an individual's name indicating to us who is referred to. So every word of the Kabbalah is a name of the Creator, since it expresses his actions and indicates what he is sending to us at any given moment. In the Kabbalah, it speaks about us as a part of the Creator that he distanced from himself, having bestowed egoism on this part. For this reason, the soul of a human being is comprised of two opposing parts. The first of these is the divine part, which exhibits its own desire to perceive the Creator in some of us, thus causing people to begin searching for something spiritual in order to be fulfilled internally. At the same time, the pleasures pursued by those around are no longer satisfying to those seeking spiritual fulfillment. The second part of the soul is that specially created egoistic nature that people experience in full measure, the desire to possess everything, to know everything, to do everything, to see the results of all their actions, that is to see a part of the self in all of one's surroundings. The egoistic part of the soul is the only part that has been created, since the altruistic part of the soul is part of the Creator himself. Having taken his desire from within himself and having endowed it with egoism, he thereby distanced this part from himself and it became the soul, a creation separate from him. It's considered a creation precisely because it contains a part of something new, this being its egoism, a quality which had not existed heretofore as nothing of the kind exists within the Creator. It is this notion, the soul, consisting of a part of the Creator and a part of the newly created egoistic feeling to receive everything into oneself, that the Kabbalah deals with. It's the soul rather than the body that is discussed in the Bible, because the body consisting of flesh and bone is like the flesh and bone of the animals, and its end is decay and return to the elements of the world. We sense ourselves as the body because we don't perceive our soul. But as a person begins to perceive the soul, the sense of the physical body, of its desires, of its pains, diminishes because the soul asserts itself more and more. A person that's further advanced on the spiritual path does not sense the desires of the body altogether because he pays attention only to the soul, the part of the Creator in a person. Thus, the body begins to represent the spiritual desires rather than the desires of the flesh and bone, which one practically does not sense any longer. The Bible tells not of our physical body, the mass of flesh and bone, but of the two aspirations of the soul, about the desire of the divine part to perceive the Creator and to unite with him, and of the desire of the egotistical part towards self-gratification, self-satiation, a perception of oneself instead of the Creator. Both of these aspirations are known in the Kabbalah as the body, be it the egoistic body or the physical body, i.e. the body in our world. Since only our world is characterized by ego, or the spiritual body, since altruistic desires are the desires of the Creator characteristic of the spiritual world. In all instances, the Bible describes the way our soul is affected in various settings and circumstances. It also deals with our desires, focusing on the way the Creator alters them, on the way each of us can alter them, or rather, about the way we should ask Him to alter them, since we ourselves are incapable of changing them. But the main challenge for the beginner is to hold on by willpower and to concentrate upon the fact that in spite of the multitude of thoughts and desires affecting him, all of them emanate from the Creator. All these thoughts and desires, so vastly different and at times so low, are sent to him by the Creator. The Creator does this so that in spite of all obstructions, the individual persistently continues to uphold the bond with the Creator by preserving his faith in the fact that all these thoughts and desires are sent by the Creator, and so that by struggling with them, he should strengthen the faith that all emanates from the Creator. As one strengthens this conviction within oneself, he can reach such a level that this sense will always be present in spite of ever-increasing obstacles which will be sent by the Creator with the purpose of strengthening this very sense. Then the constant faith in the omnipresence of the Creator will combine with the feelings of his presence within a person. The Creator will be robed in that person, thus determining all the thoughts and desires of the person, so that in turn that being will become part of the Creator. A person must come to the realization that the very feeling of being distanced from the Creator is specifically the feeling through whose help and within it one will be able to receive the perception of the Creator. It's these two senses, which in the Kabbalah are known as kli, vessel, and or, light. The first of these is a desire to experience the Creator, which is gradually born in a person under the effects of the obstacles, the thoughts and desires, that by deliberately distracting a person from the thoughts of the Creator and his oneness that make a person increase his power of faith by exerting his willpower and thus retaining the thoughts of the Creator. Light is itself an answer to a person's desire to receive the perception of the Creator. When the Creator garbs himself in this desire of a person, the light enters the vessel. The order of spiritual growth is such that a person awakens to the desire for the spiritual, to the perception of the Creator, to the need to discover oneself only under the effects of the light, to the immense feeling of life, to inspiration derived from becoming closer to spiritual sensations, to the feeling of wholeness. But then the individual is invariably visited by extraneous thoughts. Through their influence, he descends from the level he had achieved to the level of ordinary desires and thoughts. And then, after a while, he begins to regret his own transitory and petty cares and thoughts. This in turn brings about bitterness and anger on oneself, and sometimes even on the Creator, who sends that person such thoughts and desires that turn him away from the spiritual. It is as a response to this bitter feeling of regret about his own spiritual state that he receives the light from above, the feeling of coming closer to the one above him. And then he feels that he is willing to give up everything for that sense of the Creator, for the feelings of security, self-confidence, eternity that he feels when he draws to the eternity and perfection conveyed to him from the Creator. At that moment, he's no longer ashamed of his own former thoughts and feelings and does not fear anything in this world because, at the time, he perceives his soul as part of the Creator and therefore immortal, and he agrees with the Creator in everything and justifies everything that the Creator does with his creations and is ready to deny his own intellect and follow the Creator. This sense which arises as a consequence of his soul being filled with the light of the Creator makes him a willing servant of the spiritual perceptions. But, once again, after a passage of time, one is visited by an extraneous thought. And so gradually, after many cycles of disturbing thoughts and spiritual ascents, such a steadfast feeling of spiritual need arises within one that he finally receives the ever-present light of the Creator. Rabbi Baruch once asked his grandfather, the Baal Shem Tov, "It is known that in ancient times, those desiring to experience the Creator were constantly subjecting themselves to restrictions of all sorts, but you've annulled this according to the saying that if anyone voluntarily submits to privations, one transgresses the spiritual laws and must be held responsible. So what then is the most important thing in the work that an individual must do on oneself?" The Baal Shem Tov answered, "I've come into this world to show another path. A person must strive to master three things: love of the Creator, love of the people, and love of the spiritual. then there's no need for voluntary privations. The capacity to thank the Creator is already a good bestowed by the Creator. The benevolence of the Creator is in the fact that we can love Him. His strength is in the fact that we can fear Him. What is the reason for the fact that an individual that strives to approach the Creator and senses that he comes closer to Him to a certain degree all of a sudden feels distant? The Baal Shem Tov answers this as follows. This is like teaching a toddler to walk. While the toddler is being supported, he makes several steps towards the father. But the father, wishing to teach the child to walk independently, moves away until the child learns to walk on its own. The Baal Shem Tov said, an individual's work on oneself consists of a constant struggle with egoism, a struggle to the very last breath that should result time after time in the replacement of egoism with the Creator. The Creator, like a great ruler, sits at the center of His palace. He has erected many walls and obstacles around Himself. He has scattered within the walls of His palace a great wealth, and He gives out honors and titles to those who overcome the obstacles. Upon receiving the latter from the Creator, a person becomes content. But only the one who rejects everything, desiring to be with the Creator Himself, earns the right to enter into His presence. Just as the transitory state between the seed and the sprout, that is to say, the state of complete decay of the seed, its absolute disappearance, is necessary, so until the individual reaches the state of complete denial of the self, he cannot receive a new spiritual nature. The Creator has generated the human self from nothing. And because of this, one must return from the state of the self into the state of nothing in order to unite with the Creator. That is why it is said that the Savior, the Messiah, was born on the day of the destruction of the temple. So every time a person reaches the state of complete despair, he comes to the realization that all is dust and vanity of vanities. Precisely from this state arises a new step in one's spiritual ascent, because at this point one can forsake everything. The Maggid of Mezrich, a great Kabbalist of the previous century, proclaimed, there are 10 rules of spiritual work. 3 of these rules can be learned from an infant, and 7 of them can be learned from a thief. The infant, 1, is happy for no reason, 2, does not rest even for a minute, 3, demands what he wants with all his might. The thief, 1, works at night, 2, attempts to gain this night what has not been gained in the previous night, 3, is loyal to his comrades, 4, risks his life to gain even the most insignificant things, 5, does not value that which was stolen and sells it for pennies, 6, is beaten but does not turn from his path, 7, sees the advantages of his occupation and doesn't wish to change it. He also added, there's a key to every lock, but if the lock doesn't give, a courageous thief will break it. The Creator loves a person who breaks his own heart to enter the house of the Creator. When a person apprehends the spiritual levels, only then does he become insignificant in his own eyes, and then bow before the Creator, sensing that he has no need of anything, not his own spiritual redemption, nor any spiritual ascent, nor eternity, but only the Creator. During the time of a spiritual decline, it seems to an individual that the Creator is concealing Himself, and it's difficult for the individual to sustain the faith, in his existence, in his providence. But if he indeed feels that the Creator conceals Himself from him, then he's not truly experiencing the concealment of the Creator, but rather a condition in which the Creator expects him to make an effort in order to advance towards Him. The Creator is considered to be the place, or Hamakom, precisely because one should enter Him with one's whole being, so that the Creator should surround one and be one's dwelling place. As was already noted, we dwell in an ocean of the light of the Creator, and we should become aware of this fact. During the time of prayer, a person should constantly control to what he directs his attention and efforts, to the reading of the text, and to the following of a strict order of the text fragments in a particular prayer book, to the in-depth examination of the meaning of the names and of letter combinations, to the distinct pronunciation of words, to the strict following of the mental intentions of the Kavanah in a particular prayer book, or to the most important, directing one's heart towards the attachment to the Creator. The most important thing is the intention. a prayer to perceive the Creator. Those who pray acknowledge the existence of the Creator, but those who pray for the ability to perceive the Creator experience Him.